her dust on the sidewalk. He stood for a second and let it flatten the fabric of his shirt against his stomach. Then it died, and the dull heat came back. But the clouds were still there in the south, like ragged stains on the sky. He walked back to Alice's office. She was still at her desk, still facing an endless stream of problems. There were people in her client chairs, a middle-aged Mexican couple. They had patient, trusting expressions on their faces. Her stack of paperwork had grown. She pointed vaguely at his chair, which was still placed next to hers. He squeezed in and sat down, picked up the phone, and dialed the Abilene number from memory. He gave his name as Chester Arthur and asked for Sergeant Rodriguez. He was on hold a whole minute. Then Rodriguez picked up and Reacher knew right away they had found Eugene's body. There was a lot of urgency in the guy's voice. "We need your client's name, Mr. Arthur," Rodriguez said. "What did your people find?" Reacher asked. "Exactly what you said, sir. Mile and a half north, on the left, in a deep limestone crevasse, shot once through the right eye." "Was it a 22? "No way. Not according to what I'm hearing. 9mm at least. Some big messy cannon. Most of his head is gone." "You got an estimated time of death?" "Tough question in this heat. And they say the coyotes got to him. Ate up some of the parts the pathologist likes to work with. But if somebody said Friday, I don't think we'd argue any." Reacher said nothing. "I need some names," Rodriguez said. "My guy's not the doer," Reacher said. "I'll talk to him, and maybe he'll call you." Then he hung up before Rodriguez could start arguing. Alice was staring at him again. So were her clients. Clearly, they spoke enough English to follow the conversation.
"Which president was Chester Arthur?" Alice asked.
"After Garfield, before Grover Cleveland," Reacher replied. "One of two from Vermont."
"Who was the other?"
"Calvin Coolidge."
"So they found Eugene," she said.
"Sure did."
"So now what?"
"Now we go warn Hack Walker."
"Warn him?"
Reacher nodded. "Think about it, Alice. Maybe what we've got here is 2 out of 2, but I think it's more likely to be 2 out of 3. They were a threesome. Hack and Al and Sloop. Carmen said they all worked together on the deal. She said Hack brokered it with the feds, so Hack knew what they knew, for sure. So he could be next." Alice turned to her clients.
"Sorry. Got to go," she said in English.
Hack Walker was packing up for the day. He was on his feet with his jacket on, and he was latching his briefcase closed. It was after 6 o'clock, and his office windows were growing dim with dusk. They told him that Eugene was dead, and watched the color drain out of his face. His skin literally contracted and puckered under a mask of sweat. He clawed his way around his desk and dumped himself down in his chair. He said nothing for a long moment. Then he nodded slowly.
"I guess I always knew," he said. "But I was, you know, hoping..."
He turned to look down at the photograph.
"I'm very sorry," Reacher said.
"Do they know why?" Walker asked.
"Or who?"
"Not yet." Walker paused again.
"Why did they tell you about it before me?"
"Reacher figured out where they should look," Alice said. "He told them, effectively."
Then she went straight into his 2 for 3 theory. The deal, the dangerous knowledge, the warning. Walker sat still and listened to it. His color came back, slowly.
He stayed quiet, thinking hard. Then he shook his head.
Can't be right, he said, because the deal was really nothing at all. Sloop caved in and undertook to pay the taxes and the penalties. That was all. Nothing more. He got desperate. Couldn't stand the jail time. It happens a lot. Al contacted the IRS, made the offer. They didn't bat an eye. It's routine. It was handled at a branch office by junior-grade personnel. That's how routine it was. The federal prosecutor needed to sign off on it, which is where I came in. I hustled it through, was all. A little faster than it might have gone without me. You know, the old boys' club. It was a routine IRS matter. And believe me, nobody gets killed over a routine IRS matter. He shook his head again. Then he opened his eyes wide and went very still. I want you to leave now, he said. Alice nodded. We're very sorry for your loss. We know you were friends. But Walker just looked confused, like that wasn't what he was worrying about.
What? Richard said. We shouldn't talk anymore, is what Walker said. Why not?
Because we're going around in a circle and we're finishing up in a place where we don't want to be.
We are?
Think about it, guys. Nobody gets killed over a routine IRS matter.
Or do they?
Sloop and Al were fixing to take the trust money away from Carmen and give most of it to the government. Now, Sloop and Al are dead. 2 plus 2 makes 4. Her motive is getting bigger and better all the time. We keep talking like this. I've got to think conspiracy. 2 deaths, not 1. No choice, I've got to. And I don't want to do that.
There was no conspiracy, Reacher said. If she had already hired people, why did she pick me up?
Walker shrugged. To confuse the issue? Distance herself?
Is she that smart?
I think she is.
So prove it. Show us she hired somebody.
I can't do that.
Yes, you can. You've got her bank records. Show us the payment.
The payment? You think these people work for free?
Walker made a face, took keys from his pocket and unlocked a drawer in his desk, lifted out the pile of financial information. Greer Non-Discretionary Trust, numbers 1 through 5. Reacher held his breath. Walker went through them, page by page, then he squared them together again and reversed them on the desk. His face was blank. Alice leaned forward and picked them up, leafed through, scanning the 4th column from the left, which was the debit column. There were plenty of debits, but they were all small and random. Nothing bigger than $297. Several below 100.
Add up the last month, Reacher said.
She scanned back.
900, round figures, she said.
Reacher nodded. Even if she hoarded it, $900 doesn't buy you much. Certainly doesn't buy you somebody who can operate the way we've seen.
Walker said nothing.
We need to go talk to her, Reacher said.
We can't, Walker said. She's on the road, headed for the penitentiary.
She didn't do it, Reacher said. She didn't do anything. She's completely innocent.
So why did she confess?
Reacher closed his eyes, sat still for a moment.
She was forced to, he said. Somebody got to her.
Who?
Reacher opened his eyes.
I don't know who, he said. But we can find out.
Get the bailiff's log from downstairs. See who came to visit her. Walker's face was still blank and sweaty,
but he picked up the phone and dialed an internal number, asked for the visitor's log to be brought up immediately. Then they waited in silence. 3 minutes later, they heard the sound of heavy footsteps in the secretarial pen, and the bailiff came in through the office door. It was the day guy. He was breathing hard after running up the stairs. He was carrying a thick book in his hand. Walker took it from him and opened it up, scanned through it quickly and reversed it on the desk, used his finger to point. Carmen Greer was logged in during the early hours of Monday morning. She was logged out 2 hours ago into the custody of the Texas Department of Correction. In between, she had received one visitor. Twice. 9 o'clock on Monday morning, and again on Tuesday at noon, the same assistant DA had gone down to see her. "Preliminary interview and then the confession," Walker said. There were no other entries at all. "Is this right?" Reacher asked. The bailiff nodded. "Guarantee," he said. Reacher looked at the log again. The first ADA interview had lasted 2 minutes. Clearly, Carmen had refused to say a word. The second interview had lasted 12 minutes. After that, she had been escorted upstairs for the videotape. "Nobody else?" he asked.
"There were phone calls," the bailiff said.
"When?"
"All day Monday and Tuesday morning."
"Who was calling her?"
"Her lawyer."
"Her lawyer?" Alice said. The guy nodded.
"It was a big pain in the ass," he said. "I had to keep bringing her in and out to the phone."
"Who was the lawyer?"
Alice asked.
"We're not allowed to ask, ma'am. It's a confidentiality thing. Lawyer discussion's a secret."
"Man or woman?"
"It was a man."
"Hispanic?"
"I don't think so. He sounded like a regular guy. His voice was a little muffled. I think it was a bad phone line."
"Same guy every time?"
"I think so."
There was silence in the office. Walker nodded vaguely, and the bailiff took it for a dismissal. They heard him walk out through the secretarial pen. They heard the lobby door close behind him.
"She didn't tell us she was represented," Walker said.
"She told us she didn't want representation."
"She told me the same thing," Alice said.
"We need to know who this person was," Reacher said. "We need to get the phone company to trace the calls." Walker shook his head.
"Can't do it. Legal discussions are privileged."
Reacher stared at him.
"You really think it was a lawyer?"
"Don't you?"
"Of course not. It was some guy threatening her, forcing her to lie. Think about it, Walker. First time your ADA saw her, she wouldn't say a word. 27 hours later, she's confessing. Only thing that happened in between was a bunch of calls from this guy."
"But what kind of threat could make her say that?" The killing crew was uneasy in its new role as babysitter. Each member felt exactly the same way, each for the exact same reasons. Holding a child hostage was not a normal part of their expertise. Taking her in the first place had been. That was a fairly standard operation, based as always on lure and deception. The woman and the tall, fair man had gone to the Red House as a pair, because they figured that would match the public's perception of how social workers operate. They had arrived in the big, official-looking sedan and used a brisk, professional manner. They had mixed it with a generous helping of pious do-gooder sanctimony, like they were desperately concerned with the child's welfare above all else. They had a thick wad of bogus papers to display. The papers looked exactly like family services warrants and relevant authorizations from state agencies, But the grandmother hardly even looked at them. She offered no resistance at all. It struck them as unnatural. She just handed the kid over, like she was real glad about it. The kid put up no resistance either. She was very earnest and silent about the whole thing, like she was trying to be on her best behavior, like she was trying to please these new adults. So they just put her in the car and drove her away. No tears, no screaming, no tantrums. It went well, all things considered. Very well. About as effortless as the Al Eugene operation. But then they departed from the usual. Radically. Standard practice would have been to drive straight to a scouted location and pull the triggers. Conceal the body, and then get the hell out. But this task was different. They had to keep her hidden, and alive, and unharmed, at least for a spell. Maybe days and days. It was something they had never done before. And professionals get uneasy with things they've never done before. They always do. That's the nature of professionalism. Professionals feel best when they stick to what they know. Call Family Services, Reacher said. Right now. Hack Walker just stared at him. You asked the question, Reacher said. What kind of a threat could make her confess to something she didn't do? Don't you see? They must have gotten her kid. Walker stared a beat longer, frozen. Then he wrestled himself into action and unlocked another drawer and rattled it open, lifted out a heavy black binder, opened it up and thumbed through, and grabbed his phone and dialed a number. There was no answer. He dabbed the cradle and dialed another, some kind of an evening emergency contact. It was picked up and he asked the question, using Ellie's full name, Mary Ellen Greer. There was a long pause, then an answer. Walker listened, said nothing, just put the phone down, very slowly and carefully, like it was made out of glass. They never heard of her, he said. Silence. Walker closed his eyes and then opened them again.
Okay, he said. Resources are going to be a problem. State police, of course. And the FBI, because this is a kidnap. But we've got to move immediately. Speed is absolutely paramount here. It always is with kidnap cases. They could be taking her anywhere. So I want you two to go down to Echo right now. Get the full story from Rusty. Descriptions and everything. Rusty won't talk to us, Reacher said. She's too hostile. What about the Echo sheriff? That guy's useless. He's probably drunk right now. He'll have to do it. Waste of time, Reacher said.
Walker opened another drawer and took two chromium stars from a box, tossed them onto the desk.
Raise your right hands, he said. Repeat after me.
He mumbled his way through some kind of an oath. Reacher and Alice repeated it back, as far as they could catch it. Walker nodded.
Now you're sheriff's deputies, he said. Valid throughout Echo County. Rusty will have to talk to you.
Reacher just stared at him.
What? Walker said. You can still do that here? Deputize people? Sure I can, Walker said. Just like the Wild West. Now get going, okay? I've got a million calls to make.
Reacher took his chromium star and stood up, an accredited law enforcement official again, for the first time in 4 1/4 years. Alice stood up alongside him.
Meet back here directly, Walker called, and good luck.
8 minutes later, they were in the yellow VW again, heading south toward the Red House for the second time that day. The woman took the call. She let the phone ring 4 times while she got the voice-altering device out of her bag and switched it on. But she didn't need it. She didn't need to talk at all. She just listened, because it was a one-sided message. Long and complex, but basically clear and concise and unambiguous, and the whole thing was repeated twice. When it was over, she hung up the phone and put the electronics back in her bag.
"It's tonight," she said. "What is?"
the tall man asked.
"A supplementary job," she said. "The Pecos thing. Seems like the situation up there is unraveling slightly. They found Eugene's body."
"Already?" "Shit," the dark man said.
"Yes, shit," the woman said.
"So we move on the supplementary right away, tonight, before things get any worse."
"Who's the target?" the tall man asked.
"His name is Jack Reacher, some drifter, ex-military. I've got a description. There's a girl lawyer in the picture, too. She'll need attention as well."
"We do them simultaneous with this babysitting gig?"
The woman shrugged. "Like we always said, we keep the babysitting going as long as possible, but we reserve the right to terminate when necessary." The men looked at each other. Ellie watched them from the bed.
15. Reacher was not good company on the ride south. He didn't talk at all for the first hour and a half. Evening dark had fallen fast, and he kept the VW's dome light on and studied the maps from the glove compartment. In particular, he concentrated on a large-scale topographical sheet that showed the southern part of Echo County. The county boundary was a completely straight line running east to west. At its closest point, it was 50 miles from the Rio Grande. That made no sense to him.
"I don't understand why she lied about the diamond," he said.
Alice shrugged. She was pushing the little car as fast as it was willing to go.
"She lied about everything," she said.
"The ring was different," he said.
"Different how?"
"A different sort of lie, like apples are different from oranges."
"I don't follow."
"The ring is the only thing I can't explain to myself."
"The only thing?"
"Everything else is coherent, but the ring is a problem." She drove on another mile. The power line poles came and went, flashing through the headlight beams for a split second each.
"You know what's going on, don't you?" she said.
"You ever done computer-aided design?" he asked.
"No," she said.
"Me neither."
"So?"
"Do you know what it is?" She shrugged again.
"Vaguely, I guess."
"They can build a whole house or car or whatever right there on the computer screen. They can paint it, decorate it, look at it. If it's a house, they can go in it, walk around. They can rotate it, look at the front, look at the back. If it's a car, they can see how it looks in daylight and in the dark. They can tilt it up and down, spin it around, examine it from every angle. They can crash it and see how it holds up. It's like a real thing, except it isn't. I guess it's a virtual thing."
"So?"
she said again. "I can see this whole situation in my mind, like a computer design, inside and out, up and down, from every angle, except for the ring. The ring screws it up."
"You want to explain that?"
"No point," he said, "until I figure it out."
"Is Ellie going to be okay?"
"I hope so. That's why we're making this trip."
"You think the grandmother can help us?"
He shrugged. "I doubt it."
"So how is this trip helping Ellie?"
He said nothing, just opened the glove compartment and put the maps back, took out the Heckler & Koch handgun, clicked out the magazine and checked the load. Never assume. But it still held its full complement of 10 shells. He put the magazine back in and jacked the first round into the chamber. Then he cocked the pistol and locked it, eased up off the passenger seat, and slipped it into his pocket.
You think we're going to need that?
She asked. Sooner or later, he said. You got more ammo in your bag? She shook her head.
I never thought I'd actually use it.
He said nothing.
You okay?
She asked. Feeling good, he said. Maybe like you did during the big trial, before the guy refused to pay. She nodded at the wheel.
It was a good feeling.
That's your thing, right?
I guess it is.
This is my thing, he said. This is what I'm built for, the thrill of the chase. I'm an investigator, Alice. Always was, always will be. I'm a hunter. And when Walker gave me that badge, my head started working.
You know what's going on, don't you?
She asked again. Aside from the diamond ring.
Tell me.
He said nothing.
Tell me,
she said again. Did you ever ride a horse?
No, she said. I'm a city girl. Openest space I ever saw was the median strip in the middle of Park Avenue.
I just rode one with Carmen. First time ever.
So?
They're very tall. You're way up there in the air.
So?
She said again. You ever ride a bike?
In New York City?
Inline skating?
A little, back when it was cool.
You ever fall?
Once. Pretty badly.
He nodded. Tell me about that meal you made for me.
What about it?
Homemade, right?
Sure.
You weighed out the ingredients?
You have to.
So you've got a scale in your kitchen?
Sure,
she said again. The scales of justice, he said.
Richard, what the hell are you talking about?
He glanced to his left. The red picket fence was racing backward to the edge of her headlight beams. We're here, he said. I'll tell you later. She slowed and turned in under the gate and bumped across the yard. Face it toward the motor barn, he said, and leave the headlights on. I want to take a look at that old pickup truck.
Okay,
she said. She coasted a yard or two and hauled on the steering wheel until the headlight beams washed into the right-hand end of the barn. They lit up half of the new pickup, half of the Jeep Cherokee, and all of the old pickup between them. Stay close to me, he said. They got out of the car. The night air felt suddenly hot and damp, different than before. It was cloudy, and there were disturbed insects floating everywhere. But the yard was quiet, no sound. They walked over together for a better look at the abandoned truck. It was some kind of a Chevrolet, maybe 20 years old, but still a recognizable ancestor of the newer truck alongside it. It had bulbous fenders and dulled paint and a roll bar built into the load bed. It must have had a million miles on it. Probably hadn't been started in a decade. The springs sagged and the tires were flat, and the rubber was perished by the relentless heat.
So?
Alice said. I think it's the truck in the photograph, Reacher said. The one in Walker's office, him and Sloop and Eugene leaning on the fender.
Trucks all look the same to me, she said.
Sloop had the same photograph.
Is that significant?
He shrugged. They were good friends. They turned away. Alice ducked back into the VW and killed the lights. Then he led her to the foot of the porch steps, up to the main entrance. He knocked, waited. Bobby Greer opened the door, stood there, surprised.
So, you came home, Reacher said.
Bobby scowled, like he had already heard it.
My buddies took me out, he said, to help with the grieving process.
Reacher opened his palm to show off the chromium star.
The badge flipped. It felt good.
Not quite as good as flashing a United States Army Criminal Investigation Division credential,
but it had an effect on Bobby. It stopped him closing the door again. Police, Reacher said. We need to see your mother. Police? You? Hack Walker just deputized us. Valid throughout Echo County. Where's your mother? Bobby paused a beat, leaned forward and glanced up at the night sky and literally sniffed the air. Storm's rolling in, he said. It's coming now, from the south. Where's your mother, Bobby? Bobby paused again. Inside, he said. Reacher led Alice past Bobby into the red foyer with the rifles and the mirror. It was a degree or two cooler inside the house. The old air conditioner was running hard. It thumped and rattled patiently somewhere upstairs. They walked through the foyer and into the parlor and back. Rusty Greer was sitting at the table in the same chair as the first time he had seen her. She was wearing the same style of clothes, tight jeans and a fringed blouse. Her hair was lacquered up into a halo as hard as a helmet. "We're here on official business, Mrs. Greer," Reacher said. He showed her the badge in his palm. "We need some answers."
"Oh, what, big man?" Rusty said. "You going to arrest me?"
Reacher pulled out a chair and sat opposite her, just looked at her.
"I've done nothing wrong," she said.
Reacher shook his head. "As a matter of fact, you've done everything wrong."
"Like what?"
"Like my grandmother would have died before she let her grandchildren get taken away. Literally. Over her dead body, she'd have said, and she'd have damn well meant every word." Silence for a second, just the endless tick of the fan.
"It was for the child's own good," Rusty said. "And I had no choice. They had papers."
"You given grandchildren away before?"
"No."
"So how do you know they were the right papers?" Rusty just shrugged. Said nothing. "Did you check?"
"How could I?"
Rusty said.
"And they looked right. All full of big words. Aforementioned, here and after, the state of Texas."
"They were fakes," Reacher said. "It was a kidnap, Mrs. Greer. It was coercion. They took your granddaughter to threaten your daughter-in-law with." He watched her face for dawning realization. Or guilt, or shame, or fear, or remorse. There was some expression there. He wasn't exactly sure what it was. "So we need descriptions," he said. "How many were there?" She said nothing. "How many people, Mrs. Greer?"
"Two people. A man and a woman."
"White?"
"Yes."
"What did they look like?" Rusty shrugged again.
"Ordinary," she said. "Normal. Like you would expect. Like social workers from a city. They had a big car."
"Hair? Eyes, clothes?"
"Fair hair, I think. Both of them. Cheap suits. The woman wore a skirt. Blue eyes, I think. The man was tall."
"What about their car?"
"I don't know about cars. It was a big sedan, but kind of ordinary, not a Cadillac."
"Color?"
"Gray or blue, maybe. Not dark."
"You got any humble pie in the kitchen?"
"Why?"
"Because I should cram it down your throat until it chokes you. Those fair-haired white people with the blue eyes are the ones who killed Al Eugene. And you gave your own granddaughter to him." She stared at him.
"Killed? Alice dead?"
2 minutes after they took him out of his car. She went pale and her mouth started working. She said, "What about?" and then stopped. And again, "What about?" She couldn't add the word, Ellie. "Not yet," Reacher said. "That's my guess, and my hope. ought to be your hope, too, because if they hurt her, you know what I'm going to do?
She didn't answer, just clamped her lips and shook her head from side to side.
I'm going to come back down here and break your spine. I'm going to stand you up and snap it like a rotten twig.
They made her take a bath, which was awful because one of the men watched her do it. He was quite short and had black hair on his head and his arms. He stood inside the bathroom door and watched her all the time she was in the tub. Her mommy had told her, never let anybody see you undressed, especially not a man. And he was right there watching her. And she had no pajamas to put on afterward. She hadn't brought any. She hadn't brought anything.
You don't need pajamas, the man said. It's too hot for pajamas.
He stood there by the door, watching her. She dried herself with a small white towel. She needed to pee, but she wasn't going to let him watch her do that. She had to squeeze very near him to get out of the room. Then the other two watched her all the way to the bed, the other man and the woman. They were horrible. They were all horrible. She got into the bed and pulled the covers up over her head and tried hard not to cry.
What now?
Alice asked. Back to Pecos, Reacher said. I want to keep on the move. And we've got a lot of stuff to do tonight. But go slow, okay? I need time to think. She drove out to the gate and turned north into the darkness, switched the fan on high to blow the night heat away.
Think about what?
Alice asked. About where Ellie is.
Why do you think it was the same people as killed Eugene?
It's a deployment issue, he said. I can't see anybody using a separate hit team and kidnap team. Not down here, in the middle of nowhere. So I think it's one team. Either a hit team moonlighting on the kidnap, or a kidnap team moonlighting on the hits. Probably the former, because the way they did Eugene was pretty expert. If that was moonlighting, I'd hate to see them do what they're really good at.
All they did was shoot him. Anybody could do that.
No, they couldn't. They got him to stop the car. They talked him into theirs. They kept him quiet throughout. That's really good technique, Alice. Harder than you can imagine. Then they shot him through the eye. That means something, too.
What?
He shrugged. It's a tiny target, and in a situation like that, it's a snapshot. You raise the gun, you fire. One, two. No rational reason to pick such a tiny target. It's a kind of exuberance. Not exactly showing off as such, more like just celebrating your own skill and precision, like reveling in it. It's a joy thing. Silence in the car, just the hum of the motor and the whine of the tires.
And now they've got the kid,
Alice said. And they're uneasy about it, because they're moonlighting. They're used to each other alone. They're accustomed to their normal procedures. Having a live kid around makes them worried about being static and visible.
They'll look like a family, a man, a woman, a little girl?
Nah, I think there's more than two of them.
Why?
Because if it was me, I'd want three. In the service, we used three. Basically, a driver, a shooter, and a back watcher.
You shot people? The military police?
He shrugged. Sometimes, you know, things better not brought to trial. She was quiet for a long moment. He saw her debating whether to hitch an inch farther away from him. Then he saw her decide to stay where she was.
So why didn't you do it for Carmen?
She asked.
If you've done it before.
She asked me the same question. My answer is, I really don't know. She was quiet again, another mile.
Why are they holding Ellie?
She said. I mean, still holding her. They already coerced the confession, so what's still the gain?
You're the lawyer, he said. You have to figure that one out. When does it become set in stone? You know, irrevocable.
Never, really. A confession can be retracted any time. But in practice, I guess, if she answered nolo contendere to the grand jury indictment, that would be regarded as a milestone.
And how soon could that happen?
Tomorrow, easily. Grand jury sits more or less permanently. It would take 10 minutes, maybe a quarter of an hour.
I thought justice ground real slow in Texas.
Only if you plead not guilty.
Silence again for many miles. They passed through the crossroads hamlet with the school and the gas station and the diner. It whipped backward through the headlight beams, 3 short seconds, end to end. The sky up ahead was still clear, the stars were still visible, but the clouds were building fast behind them in the south.
So maybe tomorrow they'll let her go,
Alice said. And maybe tomorrow they won't.
They'll be worried she could make the ID.
She's a smart kid. She sits quiet, watching and thinking all the time.
So what do we do?
We try to figure out where she is. He opened the glove compartment and took out the maps again, found a large-scale plan of Pecos County, and spread it on his knee, reached up and clicked on the dome light.
How?
Alice asked.
I mean, where do you start?
I've done this before, Reacher said. Years and years I hunted deserters and AWOLs. You train yourself to think like them, and you usually find them.
That easy?
Sometimes, he said. Silence in the speeding car.
But they could be anywhere, Alice said. I mean, there must be a million hideouts, abandoned farmsteads, ruined buildings.
No, I think they're using motels, Reacher said.
Why?
Because appearances are very important to them, part of their technique. They suckered Al Eugene somehow, and they looked plausible to Rusty Greer, not that she cared too much. So they need running water and showers and closets and working electricity for hair dryers and shavers.
There are hundreds of motels here, she said. Thousands, probably.
He nodded. And they're moving around, almost certainly. A different place every day. Basic security.
So how do we find the right one tonight?
He held the map where it caught the light. We find it in our heads. Think like them, figure out what we'd do, then that should be the same thing as what they'd do.
Hell of a gamble.
Maybe, maybe not.
So are we going to start now?
No, we're going back to your office now.
Why?
Because I don't like frontal assaults. Not against people this good. Not with a kid in the crossfire.
So what do?
We divide and rule. We lure 2 of them out. Maybe we capture a tongue.
A tongue? What's that?
An enemy prisoner who'll talk.
How do we do that?
We decoy them. They're already aware we know about them, so they'll come for us. Try a little damage control.
They know we know? But how?
Somebody just told them.
Who?
Reacher didn't reply, just stared down at the map, looked at the faint red lines that represented roads meandering across thousands of empty miles, closed his eyes and tried hard to imagine what they looked like in reality. Alice parked in the lot behind the law offices. She had a key to the rear door. There were a lot of shadows, and Reacher was very vigilant as they walked. But they made it inside okay. The old store was deserted and dusty and silent and hot. The air conditioner had been turned off at the end of the day. Reacher stood still and listened for the inaudible quiver of people waiting. It's a primeval sensation, received and understood far back in the brain. It wasn't there. "Call Walker and give him an update," he said. "Tell him we're here." He made her sit back to back with him at somebody else's desk in the center of the room, so he could watch the front entrance while she watched the rear. He rested the pistol in his lap with the safety off. Then he dialed Sergeant Rodriguez's number in Abilene. Rodriguez was still on duty, and he sounded unhappy about it.
"We checked with the Bar Association," he said. "There are no lawyers licensed in Texas called Chester A. Arthur."
"I'm from Vermont," Reacher said. "I'm volunteering down here, pro bono."
"Like hell you are."
The line went quiet. "I'll deal," Reacher said. "Names in exchange for conversation."
"With who?"
"With you, maybe. How long have you been a ranger?"
17 years.
"How much do you know about the Border Patrol?"
"Enough, I guess."
"You prepared to give me a straight yes-no answer? No comebacks?"
"What's the question?"
"You recall the Border Patrol investigation 12 years ago?"
"Maybe."
"Was it a whitewash?" Rodriguez paused a long moment, and then he answered with a single word. "I'll call you back," Reacher said. He hung up and turned and spoke over his shoulder to Alice. "You get Walker?" he asked.
"He's up to speed," she said. "He wants us to wait for him here, for when he's through with the FBI.
Reacher shook his head. "Can't wait here. Too obvious. We need to stay on the move. We'll go to him, and then we'll get back on the road." She paused a beat.
"Are we in serious danger?"
"Nothing we can't handle," he said. She said nothing. "You worry?" he asked.
"A little," she said. "A lot, actually."
"You can't be," he said. "I'm going to need your help."
"Why was the lie about the ring different?"
"Because everything else is hearsay. But I found out for myself the ring wasn't a fake. Direct personal discovery, not hearsay. Feels very different."
"I don't see how it's important."
"It's important because I've got a whole big theory going, and the lie about the ring screws it up like crazy."
"Why do you want to believe her so much?"
"Because she had no money with her."
"What's the big theory?"
"Remember that Balzac quotation? And Marcuse?" Alice nodded. "I've got another one," Reacher said. "Something Ben Franklin once wrote."
"What are you, a walking encyclopedia?"
"I remember stuff I read, is all. And I remember something Bobby Greer said, too, about armadillos."
She just looked at him. "You're crazy," she said.
He nodded. "It's only a theory. It needs to be tested. But we can do that."
"How?"
"We just wait and see who comes for us." She said nothing. "Let's go check in with Walker," he said. They walked through the heat to the courthouse building. There was a breeze again, blowing in from the south. It felt damp and urgent. Walker was on his own in his office, looking very tired. His desk was a mess of phone books and paper.
"Well, it started," he said. "Biggest thing you ever saw. FBI and state police, roadblocks everywhere, helicopters in the air, more than 150 people on the ground. but there's a storm coming in which ain't going to help.
Reacher thinks they're holed up in a motel, Alice said.
Walker nodded grimly. If they are, they'll find them. Manhunt like this, it's going to be pretty relentless. You need us anymore?
Reacher asked.
Walker shook his head. We should leave it to the professionals now. I'm going home, grab a couple hours rest.
Reacher looked around the office. The door, the floor, the windows, the desk, the filing cabinets.
I guess we'll do the same thing, he said. We'll go to Alice's place. Call us if you need us, or if you get any news, okay?
Walker nodded.
I will, he said. I promise.
We'll go as FBI again,
the woman said.
It's a no-brainer.
All of us? The driver asked. What about the kid?
The woman paused. She had to go because she was the shooter, and if she had to split the team 2-1, she wanted the tall guy with her, not the driver.
You stay with the kid, she said.
There was a moment's silence.
Abort Horizon?
The driver asked. It was their standard operating procedure. Whenever the team was split, the woman set an abort horizon, which meant that you waited until the time had passed, and then, if the team wasn't together again, you got the hell out. Every man for himself.
4 hours, okay, the woman said. Done and dusted.
She stared at him a second longer, eyebrows raised, to make sure he understood the implication of her point. Then she knelt and unzipped the heavy valise.
So let's do it, she said.
They did the exact same things they had done for Al Eugene, except they did them a whole lot faster, because the Crown Vic was parked in the motel's lot, not hidden in a dusty turnout miles from anywhere. The lot was dimly lit and mostly empty, and there was nobody around, but it still wasn't a secure feeling. They pulled the wheel covers off and threw them in the trunk. They attached the communications antennas to the rear window and the trunk lid. They zipped blue jackets over their shirts. They loaded up with spare ammunition clips. They squared the souvenir ball caps on their heads. They checked the loads in their 9mm pistols and racked the slides and clicked the safety catches and jammed the guns in their pockets. The tall, fair man slipped into the driver's seat. The woman paused outside the motel room door.
4 hours, she said again. Done and dusted.
The driver nodded and closed the door behind her, glanced over at the kid in the bed. Done and dusted meant leave nothing at all behind, especially live witnesses. Reacher took the Heckler & Koch and the maps of Texas and the FedEx packet out of the VW and carried them into Alice's house, straight through the living room and into the kitchen area. It was still and cool inside, and dry. The central air was running hard. He wondered for a second what her utility bills must be like.
"Where's the scale?" he asked.
She pushed past him and squatted down and opened the cupboard, used two hands and lifted a kitchen scale onto the countertop. It was a big piece of equipment. It was new, but it looked old, a retro design. It had a big white upright face the size of a china plate, like the speedometer on an old-fashioned sedan. It was faced with a bulbous plastic window with a chromium bezel. There was a red pointer behind the window and large numbers around the circumference, a manufacturer's name and a printed warning, not legal for trade.
Is it accurate? He asked.
Alice shrugged.
I think so, she said. The nut roast comes out okay.
There was a chromium bowl resting in a cradle above the dial. He tapped on it with his finger, and the pointer bounced up to a pound and then back down to zero.
He took the magazine out of the Heckler & Koch and laid the empty gun in the bowl. It made a light, metallic sound. The pointer spun up to 2 pounds and 6 ounces. Not an especially light weapon. About right, he figured. His memory told him the catalog weight was in the region of 43 ounces with an empty magazine. He put the gun back together and opened cupboards until he found a store of food. He lifted out an unopened bag of granulated sugar. It was in a gaudy yellow packet that said 5 pounds on the side.
What are you doing?
Alice asked. Weighing things, he said. He stood the sugar upright in the chromium bowl. The pointer spun up to 5 pounds, exactly. He put the sugar back in the cupboard and tried a cellophane-wrapped packet of chopped nuts. The pointer read 2 pounds. He looked at the label on the packet and saw 2 pounds. Good enough, he said. He folded the maps and laid them across the top of the bowl. They weighed 1 pound and 3 ounces. He took them off and put the nuts back on. Still 2 pounds. He put the nuts back in the cupboard and tried the FedEx packet. It weighed 1 pound and 1 ounce. He added the maps, and the pointer inched up to 2 pounds and 4 ounces. Added the loaded gun on top, and the pointer jerked around to 5 pounds and 3 ounces. If he had wanted to, he could have calculated the weight of the bullets. Okay, let's go, he said. But we need gas, long ride ahead. And maybe you should get out of that dress. You got something more active?
I guess,
she said, and headed for the stairs.
You got a screwdriver?
He called after her.
Under the sink,
she called back. He bent down and found a brightly colored toolbox in the cupboard. It was made out of plastic and looked like a lunch pail. He clicked it open and selected a medium-sized screwdriver with a clear yellow handle. A minute later, Alice came back down the stairs wearing baggy, khaki cargo pants and a black T-shirt with the sleeves torn off at the shoulder seams.
Okay,
she asked.
Me and Judith, he said. Got a lot in common.
She smiled and said nothing.
I'm assuming your car is insured, he said. It could get damaged tonight.
She said nothing, just locked up her door and followed him out to the VW. She drove out of her complex, with Reacher craning his neck, watching the shadows. She got gas at a neon-bright all-night station out on the El Paso Road. Reacher paid for it.
Okay, back to the courthouse, he said. Something I want from there.
She said nothing. Just turned the car and headed east, parked in the lot behind the building. They walked around and tried the street door. It was locked up tight.
So, what now? She asked.
It was hot on the sidewalk, still up there around 90 degrees, and damp. The breeze had died again. There were clouds filling the sky.
I'm going to kick it in, he said.
There's probably an alarm.
There's definitely an alarm. I checked.
So
I'm going to set it off.
Then the cops will come.
I'm counting on it.
You want to get us arrested?
They won't come right away. We've got 3 or 4 minutes, maybe.
He took 2 paces back and launched forward and smashed the flat of his sole above the handle. The wood splintered and sagged open a half inch, but held. He kicked again, and the door crashed back and bounced off the corridor wall. A blue strobe high up outside started flashing, and an urgent electric bell started ringing. It was about as loud as he had expected.
Go get the car, he said. Get it started and wait for me in the alley.
He ran up the stairs 2 at a time and kicked in the outer office door without breaking stride, jinked through the secretarial pen like a running back,
and steadied himself and kicked in Walker's door. It smashed back, and the Venetian blind